WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. We're learning more about what happened yesterday when two Frederick City police officers and a man wound up being shot in the chest, and charges have been filed against that man involved. Maryland State Police say when police got to the intersection of Key Parkway and Waverly Drive yesterday in the city of Frederick, they found Dominique Lewis sitting on an electrical box with a gun. Police say when officers Brian Snyder and Kristen Kowalski walked toward him and asked him to show his hands, he refused. Police then say Lewis began to walk away from them and then abruptly turned around and fired multiple rounds at them. The officers then shot at him, according to police. All three were taken to shock trauma in Baltimore. Lewis is charged with two counts of attempted first-degree and second-degree murder, along with some other things. With the threat of a possible Russian invasion of Ukraine looming, President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin will talk today. The phone call comes as the U.S. plans to evacuate its embassy in Kyiv.
Fox News has learned there are signals that a Russian invasion into Ukraine could happen in a day or two. However, there is no indication yet that Putin has made a final decision and that Russia may be running a disinformation campaign. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan did confirm that Putin could invade during the Olympics, likely beginning with aerial bombing and missile attacks and then cutting off road and air departures on the ground. Biden says the U.S. military will not do rescues.
Fox's Matt Finn. If you have kids under five, they will not be able to get Pfizer's vaccine until at least April. The FDA postponed a meeting to consider approving that COVID shot for little kids until then. As that happens, medical experts are looking into whether adults will need more boosters to keep up their immunity.
A CDC study shows the effectiveness of the vaccines goes down after 4 months, but the study also shows the vaccines offer high protection against severe illness and hospitalizations, especially during the Omicron surge last month.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. A staggering number of people were killed in one local county last year.
Here in Montgomery County, 11 pedestrians were killed and 480 people were hit while they were walking or riding their bicycles.
Montgomery County Council Vice President Evan Glass says three more pedestrians have already been killed this year,
underscoring the need for improved pedestrian safety and road design.
Glass today hosting a Vision Zero event
at an incredibly dangerous intersection.
In Wheaton, at the intersection of Veers Mill Road and Randolph Road, where cars, public transportation, and pedestrians all compete for the same roadway. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the mayors of Los Angeles and Cincinnati are teaming up for charity as they wage a playful battle for Super Bowl bragging rights when their city's teams, the Rams and Bengals, play in Super Bowl 56 tomorrow.
The leaders of the two cities announced the losing mayor will be forced to wear the other team's jersey, while the winning city's mayor will donate to the other's children's hospital. The cash will come out of either Mayor Eric Garcetti or Mayor Aftab Purival's pocket.
Fox's Rob Dawson, and tonight the Wizards play the Kings. Traffic and weather next. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In the district, a portion of Southern Avenue is still closed between Chesapeake Street and Wheeler Road. That due to police activity, that in Southeast, but the earlier fire department activity on North Capitol Street between Quincy Place and R Street cleared, and everything there has been reopened. Reports of an accident on 295 northbound before Laboratory Road, so use extra caution there. No problems reported on the Beltway so far this morning, other than some police activity on the right shoulder on the outer loop after Kenilworth Avenue. That is not causing any delays. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, partly sunny, a high near 60. Tonight, a chance of rain possibly mixed with snow. Accumulation of less than an inch possible, a low around 30. Tomorrow, snow likely before 8 a.m. New accumulation of less than an inch, otherwise mostly cloudy, a high near 34. 49 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, from the 105.9 WMAL WynnBET Studios,
the Saturday Morning Update.
It's hour two of the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. John Gizzi joins us, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax TV and Newsmax.com. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, it hasn't been a particularly good morning or a good week for President Biden. This headline from CNN Politics. CNN poll. Most Biden detractors say he's done nothing they like since becoming president. Nearly 6 in 10 Americans disapprove of how Joe Biden is handling his presidency. Most of that group saying there's literally nothing Biden has done since taking office that they approve of. And I am quoting CNN on that. John, I can understand when you've got all the Republicans supporting, let's say, Trump, all the Democrats supporting Biden, let's say. But now Biden seems to be losing his Democrats and independents significantly.
I would probably say one has to go back to 1974 as the Watergate scandal was metastasizing and Republicans were beginning to wish Richard Nixon would go away to find anything remotely comparable to the CNN poll numbers surrounding President Biden. It should be pointed out that Real Clear Politics had a similar poll with 54.8% of Americans expressing disapproval and just barely 40% saying they approved. And one has to look deeper. Real Clear Politics is a compilation of all polls, and it includes questions on issues. And the fact is that the president received exceedingly low marks on the three I's, immigration, inflation, and international affairs. Now, of course, this is a midterm election year, and it certainly gives a lot of encouragement to Republicans as they try to take back the House and the Senate. It will also almost certainly encourage a few other House Democrats to join the already 29 who are saying, out of here, I'm not running. But if one looks at the even bigger picture on the world front, one has to remember something. Vladimir Putin has always struck when he thinks a U.S. president is on the defensive and low. This was certainly the case in 2008 as George W. Bush was leaving the White House. His poll numbers were low, and Putin struck at Osetia, a province of Georgia. More recently, in 2014, Barack Obama had taken a shellacking in which Republicans won both houses of Congress in the midterm election. That's when Putin seized Crimea. And now, more than 100,000 troops are amassed on the border of Ukraine, and the speculation mounts. Putin reads American polls.
So, John, the German chancellor was at the White House the first of the week, and a lot of questions about Germany and their role in the mess with Russia and Ukraine right now. You spoke with President Trump's former national security advisor, Robert O'Brien. And what did he have to say about Germany?
He got right to the point. In order to stop Putin and preserve Ukraine, Germany has to become involved. Now, Mr. O'Brien told me that before Chancellor Olaf Scholz and President Biden had their joint news conference. At the news conference, repeatedly, both the president and the chancellor said Germany would be there if Russia invaded Ukraine with tanks and troops. The specifics of this and how Germany would be there escaped the press conference. Look, the Germans are not going to give up the Nord Stream 2 pipeline at this point. In order to do that, that would mean that they would have to stop purchasing gasoline from Russia and get more expensive gasoline from other countries in the world, such as the United States. This means that, frankly, they are not going to confront Putin and Putin's Russia on this issue. In addition, there's other signs that Germany just doesn't want to be involved. Mr. O'Brien noted that the Germans sold some used, and I mean 30-year-old used, tanks that were held by the old communist East Germany. And yet, when the Estonians wanted to give these used tanks to Ukraine to fight a possible Russian invader, Germany said no. It appears as though Germany will stay uninvolved in whatever developments are coming up.
This warning for American citizens to get out 24 to 48 hours, have you seen that happen in the past, or have we always been there when we have people in these countries?
Certainly in Southeast Asia, we've gotten families out before it appeared as though there would be an overrunning of the government we were supporting. In Ukraine now, this has just fueled the White House's expectation that Russia is going to strike at Ukraine sooner rather than later. On the other hand, I spoke to three members of the German Bundestag, or parliament, on Thursday morning. They believe, and again they requested anonymity, that this is a case of the movie Wag the Dog, used as a euphemism for Bill Clinton going into the Balkans and seeing danger there just as he was being enmeshed in political scandal. They also point out that while the United States is evacuating families and warning of an imminent attack, they're the only ones warning about this. Ukraine itself is saying they want to be calm, and President Zelensky says he sees no attack on the horizon. So it's a very confused situation. Is Russia on the verge of attacking Ukraine? Well, if they did, they would lose the support of just about anything they may have in the West, and they would then have to depend on their new partnership with China, and they'd be a junior partnership. It depends on who's spinning the narrative.
In the midst of the international politics, of course, we have domestic politics, the Supreme Court vacancy. What is the latest you're hearing on President Biden and that process?
Well, one of the great dilemmas of the modern selection of Supreme Court justices is that presidents float trial balloons, and more often than not, Rick, those balloons are fired upon. The latest example was this week when Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican, began to praise federal judge Michelle Childs of his home state of South Carolina. Well, speculation mounted that the president would be interviewing Judge Childs. And now it turns out that the more liberal wing of the Democratic Party in the Senate is irate about Judge Childs. She's cast a few decisions that are somewhat less than leftist. This just enhances the prediction this reporter made weeks ago and that official Washington believes at this point, that the president, when all is said and done and he's talked to everyone, will go back to the first choice we all talked about and are still speculating about, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, the second highest court in the land. One other thing to say, leaving outside the judge's credentials and particular leadings, it should be noted that three of the nine justices of the current Supreme Court came from the D.C. Court of Appeals. There's a possible candidate for the high court who comes from that bench. Bet on it.
One note on Michelle Childs, John, from South Carolina. Jim Clyburn is one of her biggest supporters. Biden owes Jim Clyburn one. Well, actually, Biden owes Jim Clyburn more than one. What does that mean when Biden has to make this decision between the guy who really resuscitated his failing presidential campaign and basically got him elected versus the progressives you mentioned?
Jim Clyburn performed the nearest thing to resurrection of the dead when he delivered a victory in the South Carolina primary to Joe Biden, who did not even stay in New Hampshire to watch his humiliating defeat. The fact is that Jim Clyburn, chairman of the House Democratic Conference, was responsible for a heavy turnout of Biden supporters in the Palmetto State's black community, and it would certainly seem that the president owes him big time, like a Supreme Court appointment. That said, Jim Clyburn is in his 80s. He's not going to be in the House for a long time, and in fact, there will be new leaders in the Democratic hierarchy in the House come next year. It's a matter of paying back an old debt or dealing with people who can do things for him in the future. My guess is he looks to the future and not the past as much as Jim Clyburn did for him. We'll find out in another 2 weeks.
Speaking of reviving the dead, at least politically, I saw a headline that you wrote this week, and I'm like, you must be kidding. Andrew Cuomo? Come on.
All right. This was an article that, to say the least, drew a lot of attention on me as much as former Governor Andrew Cuomo.
I can see why.
Yes. Let's put it this way, Rick. I just report the stuff. These are not my opinions. These are not my feelings in any way. The fact is that the hottest political story in New York is that some Democrats loyal to the former governor who resigned in disgrace last August 23rd are now saying, run, Andrew, run, but this time as an independent. Now, normally I would be dismissive. 11 women came forward and said they were victims of sexual harassment at Governor Cuomo's hands. 5 district attorneys, however, said that while these were credible witnesses, they did not have enough to make criminal charges against Governor Cuomo. Therefore, the governor's supporters can say he's certifiably innocent. Now, there's also what's happened in the nursing homes, the deaths of many COVID patients that are there, the personal abuse that the governor forced on many of his fellow Democrats. This is someone that is held in minimum high regard within his own party. And yet, one has to take him seriously. With $16.4 million in the bank, he can run a campaign as an independent. It involves getting signatures from all of the Empire State's congressional districts, and then he'll be on the ballot in a very likely 4-candidate race. His successor, acting Governor Kathy Hochul, Democrat, the likely candidate of the Republican and smaller conservative parties, Lee Zeldin, congressman from Long Island, and Jumaine Jackson, who is the second highest citywide official elected in New York and will have the ballot line of the Working Families Party. No, if this had a runoff system or required 50% of the vote plus one, Andrew Cuomo would be relegated to certain defeat. Given his money, his name recognition, and the crowded general election, we got to pay attention to him, whatever we think of him.
You mentioned the term certifiably innocent. He's also certifiably a jerk. And this money you're talking about, these millions of dollars in funds, weren't those raised under the Democratic heading?
Yes, they were raised under the Democratic heading. And you raise a point that one is sure to hear if Governor Cuomo goes in this direction. He was the sitting Democratic governor of New York State and controlled the vast bureaucracy out of Albany and could easily get people to give him money. These days, he's a disgraced ex-governor, a man without a party, in effect, and is going to use money that was raised for him under other circumstances. Seems like it could be an issue. Then again, there seems like there could be a lot of issues if Andrew Cuomo tries to become the comeback kid.
Wouldn't it be the greatest thing that could happen for the Republican, Lee Zeldin?
Well, again, it could possibly be, but remember one thing. If one is going to vote for Andrew Cuomo, he or she is someone who has probably got no use for the candidates of the traditional parties and wants to send a message independently. Having said that, it should be pointed out that the late Republican Governor Nelson Rockefeller won his third term in 1966 with 44% of the vote, because one of the Democrats' best-known bearers of a name was running on a third party. His name, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Jr. History could repeat itself.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com, and we'll be watching for you on the lawn at Newsmax TV. John, thank you.
Thank you, Rick and to all who are out there, especially the love of my life, my wife. Happy Valentine's Day in 2 days.
Well, that was very nice. It is 7:23, Saturday morning update on WMAL. We've got Cheryl Atkinson next, but Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center right now.
Overall traffic is moving well on the Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. There is some police activity on the outer loop just after Kenilworth Avenue on the right shoulder. That is not causing any delays. You will find some police activity in the district in southeast that has Southern Avenue closed between Chesapeake Street and Wheeler Road. And in College Park, watch out for the water main break that is affecting the right lane northbound on Route 1 between Pontiac Street and Quebec Street. And also you will find construction southbound on Route 1 between Metzerat Road and College Avenue in the left lane. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Still very warm ahead of a cold front. Temperatures in around 60 degrees, but the front will shift through during the day, bringing with it cooler temperatures. Eventually, a little precipitation starts to develop as we head towards the evening hours in the form of rain, changing over to light snow. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert into early Sunday morning. You have that chance for light snow, mainly accumulating in the grass, as we'll have the warm surface temperatures. It should come to an end as we get towards the morning, upwards of an inch, possibly 2 inches in a few isolated spots. High temperatures back in the mid and upper 30s by Sunday afternoon under partly cloudy skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
50 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:24 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Saturday morning update continues. Cheryl Atkinson is with us. She, of course, hosts Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, ABC 7. Cheryl, great to have you with us.
Good to be here.
You have a story tomorrow that I find fascinating, and it's a question that I think we all may have asked once or twice in our life, but, you know, never seems that anybody else asked the question, and that is green energy. Is there a downside to green energy? And you look into that tomorrow.
Well, you know, there is, because I had long heard, maybe like you had, that, gosh, a lot of pollution is made to make the clean energy, or it takes more energy to make a solar panel than the solar panel will ever earn back. So I dug into this and found, bottom line is you're trading one kind of pollution for another in many cases. And I touched on this a couple of years ago when I did the solar panel law out in California. They all have to supposedly put solar panels on new houses. And the big green energy advocates there that I interviewed who love solar energy were not putting solar on their houses because it's not ready for prime time. They don't work well. We have to buy them from China. Tons of toxic waste is made not only in the construction of them, but in the disposal. So, yeah, there are problems. Now, I'll tell you that some people take the position, though, that what you're trading for is better than what you're leaving behind. So there's still a net gain, even though there's, a ways to go. But I'm going to go over it bit by bit. We'll talk about wind, we'll talk about solar, and we'll talk about electric in terms of what they do to the environment.
I've always wondered that when somebody plugs their electric vehicle in to charge it, how is that power being generated?
Well, that's a great question, because a lot of our power, the electric power, is still generated through fossil fuels here and around the world. So even though you're driving an electric car, it turns out it's true that then to generate the electricity in many, if not most places, you use electricity that was made with a coal-fired plant or some other fossil fuel that we're trying to avoid.
We've all heard about the supply chain crisis, and one of the real problems is the international chip shortage. And I think we have a reliance on a country we'd rather not rely on. Russia's got a chip problem as well. And you look into this tomorrow.
Yeah, I think people don't realize how much this chip shortage is impacting all of us. I didn't know till we started looking into it that it's a lot more than just your computers and cars, but so many devices use these chips with this worldwide shortage. And it turns out, like so many other things, sadly, part of the problem is we rely on China for most of our chips. So Scott Thielman's looking into this for us because there is a bipartisan plan in Congress to do something about it, but as you might guess, it involves a ton of our tax money. We're going to talk about that too.
Well, the notion of the computer chips coming from China strikes me as a bit maybe of a security concern. And then you have the national security threats from cyber attacks from either China or Russia. We've talked a lot about that, and somebody's taking action. Where do you think that's going to go?
Well, it's interesting because it's one of those things you've heard people chew on and talk about and fret over, this idea that they expect a major cyber attack, maybe on our grid, our power grid, at some point, whether it's by China, Russia, or some other, you know, nefarious terrorist type. And yet you wonder what's really been done other than talk about it, because we have sort of this track record in this country of talking about this stuff and then not being ready. Let's look at the pandemic, for example, not to get off on another subject. The trillions of dollars spent on pandemic preparedness, and it didn't seem like we'd done anything when COVID broke out. Well, there actually, I learned, was a cyber commission I knew nothing about that has been convening for the past 2 years to come up with some really specific targeted areas of things we ought to do to try to avoid this. And unlike a lot of congressionally appointed commissions, they made a bunch of recommendations and about half of them were adopted. You know, again, a lot of times commissions meet and then Congress doesn't adopt or the executive branch doesn't take any of the recommendations. They actually did in this case. So I'm going to tell you more about that.
That's all tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. It's Full Measure. Cheryl, thank you very much as always.
Thanks. Have a great weekend. Happy Super Bowl weekend. Happy Valentine's Day.
And to you as well. 7:30 News next with Heather Curtis. Then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. A Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. New this hour, people who work in the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine are being told to get out now as U.S. officials fear Russia could invade Ukraine at any time. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin will be talking about the situation during a high-stakes phone call today. Secretary of State Antony Blinken will be talking today with Russia's foreign minister as he urges Russia to stand down.
Russia said that it would respond to some of the ideas we put forward. We still have not seen that response. I'll be asking Minister Lavrov if we can anticipate seeing a response in the coming days to see if we can carry the dialogue forward.
A man police say fired several rounds at two Frederick City police officers, shooting both in the chest yesterday afternoon, is charged with two counts of attempted first and second degree murder. Maryland State Police say when officers Brian Snyder and Kristen Kowalski got to the intersection of Key Parkway and Waverly Drive to look into reports of a suspicious man, they found Dominique Lewis sitting on an electrical box with a gun. Police say he ignored them when they told him to put his hands up and started walking away. But then, according to police, he spun around, shooting both officers. They then shot him. All three were taken to shock trauma in Baltimore. Truckers in Canada blocking a bridge between Ontario and Detroit in protest of vaccine mandates are being told to clear out by tomorrow. They say they're staying put.
If they don't leave, they could get about $100,000 in fine and even a year behind bars. Ottawa police tell us the truckers are using sophisticated tactics like flooding the 911 dispatch system with phone calls.
Fox's Alexis McAdams. WMAL Sports. Tonight, the Wizards play the Kings. Traffic and weather next. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In the district, you'll still find Southern Avenue is closed in both directions between Wheeler Road and Chesapeake Street in Southeast due to police activity. Also, watch out for accident and activity on 295 northbound before Laboratory Road. Use extra caution there. Right now, if you are traveling in Virginia, just be aware of some road work taking place. On the ramps from Stringfellow Road to go east and westbound on 66, that will be taking place all weekend. And some police activity now being reported in Fort Washington on Old Fort Road between Indian Head Highway and Broadview Road. Now for GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, partly sunny, a high near 60. Tonight, a chance of rain, possibly mixed with snow, a low around 30. Right now, 51 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
7:35, Saturday morning update, News Talk 105.9 WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us every weekend. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart, and he is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Everybody's talking about Ukraine. Everybody's talking about Russia. Now the State Department and Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, issuing a very dire warning for Americans to get out of Ukraine within the next 24 to 48 hours. The tone of the situation, Tony, your thoughts.
So the military posture of the Russian of Russia is one that indicates that they are ready to go. They've amassed troops around the periphery of Ukraine. They're right now in Belarus doing joint exercises. They moved additional ships through the Bosphorus Straits via Turkey or via the Turkey-controlled straits into the Black Sea. They now, I think, have at least six major warships in the Black Sea just off the Ukraine coast. So Putin has indeed created conditions, military conditions, for effective heavy-duty military action. The administration claims, again, I'm always skeptical of anything they say because of their past lying about things, has said that there's intelligence which indicates they're going to go within the next few days. It could be any time, probably sometime early next week. That would meet with military requirements for conditions on the ground. That is to say that for the best use, the most effective use of armor, and that in this case a big part of what the Russians would use in a real full invasion, those conditions are best when the ground is frozen. The ground is frozen right now, and a lot of us have been talking that February 14th, 15th would be the best time to do that. So that's what we see. With that said, I'm just not convinced Putin wants to go at this point. I don't think he's going to do anything until after the Olympics. I'm not convinced that he's going to go with all of this heavy armor and major military force that he's arrayed. The Biden administration talked about heavy use of aviation, of airplanes going in first. You know, I'm still not really convinced of that. I'm convinced that Putin will probably, if he decides to go, do a lot more cyber, do a lot more special operations with an intention of trying to capture and hold centers of gravity. That is, say, communications centers, economic centers, government centers. In other words, probably more of a decapitation attack rather than a full-blown invasion because, Rick, anyone who's studied World War II, any major peer-to-peer conflict, you would have a lot of casualties. I don't think Putin can sustain that. I don't think the West is going to, you know, really want to continue funding or supporting a war that drags out. So I do believe that if he decides to go, it's going to be very rapid. It's going to be very precise. And I don't think it's going to look like what a lot of people are portraying it to look like right now.
You know, you brought something up that has not been focused on much in the media, and that is the movement of ships. And there's another ship. I'm not sure we call it a ship. I guess you call it a yacht. But there's a movement of another watercraft that you pointed out, and I found that very interesting. Tell us about that.
So Vladimir Putin, being essentially a 21st century Bond villain, as described by a Newsmax anchor I was talking to about this, moved his very substantial yacht out of a port in Germany. So one would ask, well, why would he move his yacht out of Germany? Well, because sanctions have been promised should the Russians invade. So obviously if you want to go kind of yachting about the Black Sea or anywhere else in the world once you've invaded, you surely don't want your boat in a port where they're going to seize it based on sanctions. So this is where the yacht moved out a few days ago. And it was reported. You know, this wasn't hidden or anything. But I think that's a clear indicator that either Putin's playing 4D chess, trying to make everybody think he's going to go, and I think it's in his interest to make people think he's going to go, or he really is going to go in one of his personal yacht outside of control of the West, just in case they try to do sanctions on it.
So President Biden, interviewed by Lester Holt, it will air during the big game tomorrow. And among the comments he made is that he would not send in troops to Ukraine because putting American troops versus Russian troops would be World War III. So I understand why he might say that. But at the same time, I ask the question, why do you tip your hand about what you won't do and what you will do when you're dealing with somebody like Putin. Wouldn't you just kind of keep your cards close to the vest?
I can understand why that would be a consideration. With that said, in this case, Biden kind of talked out of both sides of his mouth. You know, one of the things I would have said if I were him is like, look, any U.S. citizens jeopardized anywhere in the world is my concern as president. I will act to get them back. Clearly, he blew that in Afghanistan. We continue to have issues with that. So his credibility on that, by the way, anybody who's listening to this who is actually in employ of the government right now, U.S. government, you need to think twice about going to a place where you think you may get stuck, because this president will not reach out to get you back. On the other hand, regarding Ukraine and our interests, one of the things that has been made very clear, Rick, and we've talked about this multiple times, Putin reflects the fundamental paranoia of the Russians. This goes back, this Russian paranoia goes back to Tsar Alexander III, and probably even further, where they've had issues with territorial buffers that they want, basically zones of security. This is not new. Something I laid out in my editorial about 10 days ago in the Washington Times, where we have to accept, no matter what we believe, we have to accept what the Russians feel and believe, what their point of view of the world is. They are a nation which they feel has been put upon, invaded, otherwise molested by outside nations for a long time, since the Mongols. So they want and will pursue a security policy that will require them to obtain buffer states around them. We've ignored this, and Putin's continued on his game while we pretended not to recognize this. So it's not in our interest, Rick, for us to get in the middle of this conflict that Putin has been talking about since Crimea. I mean, look, he started doing this in Crimea, did nothing then. Same people are in charge now, and I think he's betting he can get away with it again. With that said, again, we need to recognize and engage on this issue, because I think it has to be made very clear that NATO's not going to back down past a certain point. And there's the Balkan states issue. This is another area of Putin's concern. So I think what Putin's pursuing here, and maybe Biden was actually somewhat trying to telegraph this, is the West is open to a conversation about Ukraine. But what I don't think they want to give him, that is the NATO and Biden, is written guarantees relating to Ukraine never joining NATO. I think that's one of the things that Putin has said he wants in writing, in some sort of agreement. And I think that's the crux of what's going on behind the scenes regarding the diplomatic effort.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, he is also the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. You'll find it all at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
7:44, the Saturday morning update. KT McFarland coming up. But first off, we head to the WMAL Traffic Center, and Michelle Murray is there this morning.
In Fort Washington, watch out for police activity affecting Old Fork Road in both directions between the Indian Head Highway and Broadview Road. Also in the district, a portion of Southern Avenue remains closed at this time between Chesapeake Street and Wheeler Road in Southeast, that due to police activity. Also, an accident being reported on 295 northbound before Laboratory Road, so use some caution there. Right now, if you are traveling in College Park, watch out for the water main break affecting the northbound lanes of Route 1 between Pontiac Street and Quebec Street, and that has the right lane block. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Still very warm ahead of a cold front. Temperatures in around 60 degrees, but the front will shift through during the day, bringing with it cooler temperatures. Eventually, a little precipitation starts to develop as we head towards the evening hours in the form of rain, changing over to light snow. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert into early Sunday morning. You have that chance for light snow, mainly accumulating in the grass, as we'll have the warm surface temperatures. It should come to an end as we get towards the morning, upwards of an inch, possibly 2 inches in a few isolated spots. High temperatures back into the mid and upper 30s by Sunday afternoon under partly cloudy skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
49 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:45, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
It's the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Great to have you with us, and it's always great to be joined by KT McFarland. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. She is President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, a flurry of activity in the White House briefing room mid to late Friday afternoon. All talk of Ukraine and the warning to American citizens in Ukraine to get out within the next 24 to 48 hours. So there's all this talk of an imminent invasion of Ukraine. You've written an opinion piece at FoxNews.com. Why is Biden warning a Russian invasion of Ukraine is imminent? And what if Putin calls his bluff? So explain what you think is happening here, KT.
Well, Rick, I've studied Vladimir Putin since the 1990s, and he takes calculated risks but doesn't do stupid stuff. And right now, a full-scale invasion in Ukraine, mass civilian casualties, that's stupid stuff because the world is watching, and that would backfire on him. And it also could backfire if the Ukrainians do fight and there's a guerrilla war or there are Russians coming back to Moscow in body bags. I think the far more likely thing that Putin has become very good at, by the way, is hybrid warfare. He invented it. He and his general Gerasimov, it's the Gerasimov doctrine is hybrid war. And hybrid war means false flag operations where the Russians actually do something but make it look like Ukrainians were doing it against ethnic Russians. That gives him an excuse to do further activities. I also think cyber attacks, shutting down the electric grid in Ukraine, which Putin has done before, shutting down the pipelines so the Ukrainians don't have access to natural gas and oil. Putin's done that before. Attacking cyber attacks against the government, that's happened. So I think that there are a lot of options that Putin has where he's going to get what he wants. He's going to get what he wants one way or another, and that's to have Ukraine not be part of NATO, to have NATO weakened, and Putin giving orders to Ukraine. In other words, Kiev coming under Moscow's dominance. So if he can get all those things without a war, I think that's what he does. In addition to that, my guess is, I mean, remember, Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. On the corruption meter, it's even more corrupt than Russia. So I've got to assume that there are lots of Ukrainian politicians who have been bought off. So if there is a coup, they would be very eager to jump into the new job as a puppet of Putin. So I think that's where this goes in the next few days. But the question that you asked is, why are they yammering on about imminent tanks across the border, get out, 30,000 Americans are supposed to somehow leave within the next 24 hours? I mean, that's physically impossible. So I keep thinking, why are they doing all this? Do they think it's somehow going to scare Putin? Do they think somehow it's going to stiffen NATO? I think there's another explanation. It's the Biden administration, by making this look like a huge possible World War III is going to happen in the next 48 hours, and then if it doesn't happen, because Putin does all the things I've just suggested, then the Biden administration and Biden can say, hey, I'm John F. Kennedy, Cuban Missile Crisis. I stared down Vladimir Putin, and I got him to back down, and we averted World War III, even though Putin gets what he wants. So I think that maybe that may be one of their motivations. I also think, though, that, you know, the Biden administration has a real history of miscalculations, whether it's evacuating from Kabul, whether cutting back on American energy is not going to lead to inflation, all the other things that they've kind of missed. I think they've also got a plan B, and plan B is they're sending American forces not to Ukraine, but to all the countries around Ukraine, and they can be used to evacuate these 30,000 Americans if Putin does start moving tanks across the border.
Well, the president reiterated again that there would not be U.S. troops in a confrontation with Russian troops, and he would not send U.S. troops into Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, look, we don't have a dog in this fight. We do not need another forever war that we can't possibly win, and we sure as heck don't need American forces fighting Russian forces. I think those American forces are just outside of Ukraine. You know, they're in Romania, they're in Poland, that if you're an American stuck in Ukraine and you're trying to get out, it's a short drive to the border, and then you're in the happy arms of American forces that can get you out via Poland, via Romania. So I think that's what he's really talking about there. And that's actually one of the few things he's done right. You know, to somehow go to World War III over Ukraine, it makes no sense at all. What I do think the biggest mistake he made, though, throughout, was that, you know, Ukraine is gone. Ukraine is lost, and Ukraine to the West. And Ukraine is lost to the West a year ago when President Biden started shutting down the American energy industry, when he allowed the Russians to have their pipeline from Ukraine, I'm sorry, from Russia to Germany, and when he shut down the American energy industry. So now Europe is completely dependent on Russian energy. If the Russians could turn off the pipeline, they could reduce the flow of the pipeline. Energy prices are going through the roof. There's an energy crisis in Europe. And that's all the stuff I think it made possible. We had the one unbelievable strategic leverage over Europe, over Russia, over everybody, and he threw it away. That's why Putin's moving now.
Well, this is all on the heels of an announcement the first day of the Olympics of a relationship. Some call it an alliance. Some would rather not call it an alliance, but a strengthened relationship between China and Russia. What does that mean in the mix?
That's a communist manifesto. Look, while we're all talking and focused on Ukraine, which is an important topic for sure, we're losing sight of the most important thing, which is the statement that came out last week at the Olympics, and that's between China and Russia, and they've got it. It was an extensive joint statement. I think it's on the sort of level of the Atlantic Charter that Churchill and Roosevelt signed in 1941, but it's Russia and China saying, we're going to work together. There are no limits to our cooperation. We're going to work together with our security, with our military, with our energy, with our economy. We're going to work together in the Arctic. We're going to work together in space. We're going to work together in the United Nations and in international organizations. And their implication is that the West is done. America's finished. The 21st century belongs to Russia and China. And this is how we're going to do it. And this is what we're going to do when we get it, which is to reconfigure the global governance to favor them at our expense. And nobody's paid a bit of attention to it. That's what I can't believe. To me, it was alarm bells going off.
Well, KT, there is a quote attributed to you at the Fox News website. Russia has, quote, all the chips in Ukraine standoff. There is a telephone call scheduled for later today between Vladimir Putin and President Biden. The president will be at Camp David. Any thoughts on being a fly on the wall? What might happen on that call?
Well, I think Putin will tell everybody what he wants, and the others can all say what they want, but Putin won't be listening. I mean, Putin not only has all the chips, he has all the high cards. And he's playing them brilliantly. And he's running rings around the Europeans and the United States and all the great world leaders. But the critical relationship in all this with regard to Ukraine is Germany. As long as Germany wants to sit this out, nothing's going to happen. You know, last week, President Biden met with the German chancellor. And President Biden came out and said, well, if he invades and troops go across the border, then there will be these severe economic consequences. We're going to shut down the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And he implied that we're going to kick the Russians out of the international banking system. And if you looked at the face of the German chancellor standing in the right on the podium with him, the German chancellor was really nervous. And then when the German chancellor was asked that same question, oh, he dodged, he weaved, he would not commit to any of those actions. He can't. You know, their economy, 50% of their economy is propped up by Russian energy. There's no way the German chancellor can jeopardize that. And in fact, in Germany right now, usually Germany has, you know, there's the right wing, the left wing, the Greens, the neo-Nazis, everybody. Well, right now in Germany, all of those political parties are united that they don't want to do anything to help Ukraine.
One other thing that strikes me here, KT, is it seems that the administration has been sort of conjuring up this intensity and almost a fear, not particularly looking real strong in the midst of all of it, which is my concern. I don't know. How does that strike you? I mean, you've been in the position of Deputy National Security Advisor. Just the way they're playing it, what are your thoughts?
Well, here's the problem. They're making all these threats. Now, Biden is very careful to always define what invasion is. Invasion is troops and tanks across the border. So anything less than that, hybrid war or minor incursion, maybe he doesn't respond to that. But the problem is by putting down all these threats where we're going to do this, we're going to do that. If you do this, we're going to do that. And then we can't carry any of it out. That's worse than making no threats at all, because then you really do look like a paper tiger. So my concern in all of this is he's making lots of threats, none of which he can carry out. And again, Ukraine was lost a year ago.
KT McFarland, author of Revolution Trump. Washington and We the People, and she is also a board member of the American Conservative Union. She'll be at CPAC 2 weeks from now. We'll get a preview with KT in the weeks ahead. Thank you so much, as always, KT.
Thank you, Rick.
It's 7:58. That's it for the Saturday morning update. Thank you for being with us. A very happy Valentine's weekend. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news with Heather Curtis.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.